You don't actually have two systems of education. Education is one thing. It's just a matter of what you're going to educate them in. It's just that in the Vedic system, then the concept is that those things that are going to be most valuable for life are taught. So you're teaching character. You're teaching the wide range of knowledge focused on philosophy. You're going to teach speciality according to the individual nature, and you're going to teach social skills in the way of the various kinds of arts and things that are finities to assist in the human interaction. That will be the basis of the education. So, you know, that always means that you're learning, in that you're learning language, you're learning your mathematics, you're learning the histories and the social systems that are there. The difference being is that the modern, in teaching language, it's not actually the science of the language, you know, especially if you're dealing with English, because English is not a science. It's the, because a science means you have rules, you apply the art according to the rules. The English works the other way around. However people use the language, that becomes the rules. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Okay, so you... what's a dictionary? What does a dictionary do? What does it define?
Words.
But what words?
Words that we use in our language.
That's the point. It doesn't define language and then how to use those words. It defines the words as they're used by them. So lexicography is documenting how people use the word. It's sometimes you say something and they think, oh, that's not a word. It's not in the dictionary. That doesn't matter. Give it 10 years and it will be in the dictionary. You understand? So you're starting from English is spoken and spelled in a particular way. Because let's say 150 years ago, you could spell a word any way you liked. But at one point, they decided to document that and that. So then, what do? You have words that are, you know, more directly from Latin. You have ones that are via French, via German, like that. Does that make sense? And so they all have different ways of spelling. And that, so that means they still have some residue left from their language they came through, or they may have been stripped of that just by common usage, and then it will be spelled or used in a different way. So what grammarians do is now try to document what it is that people are using and what would be the root to that. So they try to make a grammar out of it, just like you probably will teach that English has no declensions. Right? But
I'm not a teacher.
Oh, you're not a teacher. Are you a teacher? No, okay. So it'll probably be taught that it doesn't have any declension. The point is the word changes or the word's in a word phrase. And that word phrase is actually the change of the word. It's just not scientific enough to make that phrase into one word like all the other languages do. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So technically, it's just a local language. It's not a scientific language, it's a local language. So therefore, in the Vedic sense, it would be taught as an art. Right? Because arts are what you use in your day-to-day life. So, in other words, to communicate on a day-to-day basis, you would use English. So it's actually an art. It's not taught in the main body of things. So it can be taught. That's what I'm saying. It's not a separate thing. And modern history is a, secular European political view of the world. Is that okay? Yeah. Well, the Vedic will be what it is that the examples, because you can take unlimited things of history. There's tons of people at any time, so why certain ones? So the Vedic would take, according to character. They would take stories that would show character and the application of philosophy and character into their lives. you know, on the day-to-day level and their relationships and how they became God-conscious, how people didn't follow that and then it didn't work for them. Well, the modern generally is just either facts that would seem interesting enough that kids would want to hear about, or that it's going to be something that shows material success and gain and position. In other words, that's the value of the society. Otherwise, why show that? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the, that will be, you could say, your major difference. Math will be math. Math is math. And philosophy, generally, they don't get into it. If you major in philosophy in, say, a university, you know, so in your tertiary, quaternary, educational parts, then you may get some philosophy. Otherwise, before that, it's not really, they don't deal with it. But even there, it's doesn't have such a strong basis. It may have a centralization on Christianity, because that's generally the Western educational system is basically a Western Christianity-based educational model. It's not even Eastern or Oriental. It's specifically based off the Western Christianity. And so then they will have that view. Then you throw into it, if they're going to get a little bit more just philosophy, it'll always be impersonal. So even if they get into Vedic, it'll generally always carry. They'll use Shankara as a base. They'll never use Vaishnavism. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that will be your difference in the systems. One is that its value is occupation. And see, in occupation, then you're going to have to behave properly, right? If you don't behave properly in the workplace then, and cooperate, you're not going to get any progress. So it's about how to cooperate. And in the lifestyle is that somebody has gained benefit from the occupation. That yours is safe because no one else will take it. And you won't take others for that way. And then you have a judicial system that if they do, what you can do about it. You understand? So the concept is only basically economic morality. Right? You know, there should be nice and behaving nice, because the nicer things are, the more each individual can get a benefit. If I think others are nice, I feel comfortable because then I can benefit from the system. Rather, so the whole thing is, it's not based on what I should be doing, what is my position, what I should be doing in the system. It's about, by common cooperation, what you can gain from the system. Understand? It's not that it's people don't cooperate and then there won't be a gain. It's just, what is the basic motive for it. So that's your difference. Your modern education, that's the value system being given. Right? As I mentioned, the history is basically political because the religious element is toned down. They'll talk about religious happenings as facts, but not so much that that's the drive for it. Does that make sense? You know, like, let's say French Revolution. It'll only bring out the part that there is, you know, dissatisfaction with the nobility, right? Now that is there, but who was dissatisfied? The people in general weren't specifically dissatisfied, because, you know, whoever is in charge, basically, they're not taken care of. But the bourgeois, by there being peace, by Louis XIV and Louis XV establishing enough peace for long enough, the bourgeois can come up, and then they have money. So then they get money nearing, or if not more than, you know, many of the nobility. So naturally, since for the business person, having money is the establishment status. Therefore, what's the difference between them and nobility? You know, they can't understand nobility is based on, it's supposed to be character and protecting the people, not on making money and power from that way. It's protection and power rather than money and power. So then they can't get a position. So then, you know, somebody gets the people and they create a fight like that. But the reason you can get the people to come up is because there's been 100 years of fight between the Protestants and the Catholics. That you'll never hear about in history book. Right? There's been 100 means. You'll read about it separately, but they'll never put these things together. So the people are more dissatisfied with the religious infighting between all the different groups that they want to, you know, so then it's perceived the king is supporting this one or that one, and so then, does that make sense? Because it's just purely political, how much can you get the common person going? Because he just wants to get his daily, you know, work and everything like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that kind of thing you won't hear because it's been brought back to a secular position. Does that make sense? You know, to bring up facts about things. But so therefore, you don't necessarily understand the religion in your life and how to practice it in the life. So then by doing that, you drop it from, at best, a theistic moralistic society down into a selfless, you know, how you say, atheistic moralist society. So it's about the selflessness rather than I'm selfless because the benefit I'll get from society rather than I'm selfless and cooperate because that would please God. You understand? So the thing is they want so much goodness in society without the religion. But if you go back in time, everybody was good because of religion. That's the main thrust. It's all these philosophers starting in the 17th and 18th century that they start this only, you know, this secular kind of philosophy. It's not about God, you don't need God so much, it's just about being good. But most people, that's not why they're good because they're worried that if not good, God's not going to be very pleased. You understand? So if you drop God out of the picture, then it's kind of like how many people have that thoughtfulness and philosophical kind of outlook to be able to look and see, yes, the bigger picture, if we all cooperate together, then, you know, art, science, and economics, everything will prosper. Does that make sense? So, therefore, on its own, if you just take how the modern system of education is going, it'll be very weak, because it's not designed, you know, it's not planned, but it's inherently the nature of it, that it doesn't have, it's not very value-based. And what you do learn is what arts and sciences will be useful in economic development, you know, so vocationally based. So that's the whole point. It means, why does somebody say you have to go to school, right? It'll be so you can get a job. They never say, you go to school so you'll be educated, you'll be a good human being, you'll know how to function in society, you know how to behave as an individual. No one ever says that. It's always you go to school because you get a job. So you have a vocationally based system that is, you know, removes, you know, the theistic element from the system, but without actually giving the philosophy of it, they expect everybody to behave nice so that the economic system can work well. So not well thought out. You understand? So it will be, you know, from a bourgeois base. It's not actually coming from the intellectual, you know, or the nobility. It's coming from the business angle. You know, as I'm not sure if it's here, but other countries of the world, then even your universities are starting to be run and controlled by big businesses because they want certain kinds of quality. I mean, they're finding the quality of students isn't good enough for the business, so they come in and control. But in doing that, many of your classic educational things, like let's say, literary appreciation, or you know, all those things get dropped from the curriculum because how does anybody make money out of that? You know what I'm saying? So it's not two systems. It's just one system that you're only narrowing it down what you're taking to just a very small amount. So the point is that it's necessary that people know language. It's necessary they know their math, they know their history. Right? These are your basic kind of elements that they will expect from the government level. Right? But beyond that, they're not going to say. They don't say you have to learn French or German or, you know, those kind of things. They're basically only going to insist on good quality English, math, and history. Right? So now, that's three subjects. So smaller children may need more time, especially in English, too, you know, because you have so many aspects. You're reading, you're writing, you know, your spelling, all these different aspects. So they may take some more time as a younger, but as they get older, then it doesn't take as much time. So that leaves a lot of free time for introducing other subjects, if there's an interest. You know what I'm saying? So then it's just a matter of working your curriculum. Another weakness is that, seeing that, as we mentioned, it's only vocationally based, it's reduced down to a six-hour day. You know, that's your standard, you know, except I heard, I think, an essay they do 7 hours, but I've never heard of any other country that uses 7 hours. Most only use six, so 9 to 3 is pretty standard. You know, whatever it is 3 out of 9. So in that, you have your recesses and lunch and all that, so it has a set amount of classes you can have in a day, you know, whether you have, you know, generally what, 35-minute periods, you have so many, and, you know, 10-minute breaks and 15 minutes and half and like this kind of stuff. So, but in, if you want to put in character, you also have, it also needs time. So that's the thing. So the Vedic educational system is conceived of as longer than that. So that's technically, if you want to run the two together successfully, you actually have to have more time. So the question comes up is, how do we introduce Vedic education into this modern system, because you're trying to do it in the same amount of time, like that. But the Vedic wouldn't try that. They would just add more time. Right? The modern, because of the nature of it also, it's not very stimulating to the student. It means the occasional student is there, but generally they come from an educated background that values education, so that inspiration will come from home. But other than that, then it's not. So they need a few hours to play. Plus, we have to remember 9 to 5 is when the parents are out working, and you got to keep the kids busy for that. So 2 hours of playing kind of does it. So when they come home, then they'll, you know, the idea theoretically is that they'll spend time with the family, like that. So then, so these are times if you want to add in your, you know, more on your philosophy or your culture or these kind of things. Then you just need more periods. So you have to see if you want to blend, if you can add more time. If not, then, you, as I mentioned, English, math, and history is what you require. And then there should be a general knowledge and, you know, so many varieties of things. So if they're exposed to that, but that in that general knowledge, it can be also the Vedic subjects that are also there. So that's your general kind of thing. Okay, so then dealing with like the interaction with the kids, then, you know, oh, also is that if you want this to work smoothly, then it should be that whatever is the concept of the school, the parents are very clear about that. It can't be that if the school is one kind of experience, they go home and it's a totally different experience, at least in connection with the education. So it should be that there's, you know, good communication with the parents so that they know what the education is, why you do things, so that the parents will be supportive. So for if the child, if what going on at school and at home is you know, agreeable, then it works nicely. Just like the mother and father are saying the same thing, it works nicely. But if they can play one side or the other, they will, you know, to their advantage, like that. And then they get confused, like that. So that's, okay, then in dealing with students, means people do things wrong because they don't know due to ignorance. So it's a matter of education to make them understand, right? So then, the element is there is that then it's a matter of what it gets them to understand. And that will be the difference in dealing with the students. One group will be able to understand by explaining just this is what works. You know, this is the correct thing to do. And why, whatever questions they have, that'll work. The second group requires that, but you also have to show how that will be practical. The third group will understand it by the practicalness of gain and loss. You act in this way, then, you know, things won't work out. So in the future, you know, you don't listen to your authority. So in the future, when you're in a position of authority, no one will listen to you. Does that make sense? That kind of an element. Or if you can't cooperate, then in the future, how are you going to do anything, you know, of any greatness if you can't work with others? If you can't work with now, it's not by magic you're going to work in later. This is where you practice. You know what I'm saying? Then the fourth group basically is just the emotional kind of thing. Explaining right to do and not to do, but that emotional content must be strong enough because they can relate with you, therefore they want to do it. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. And therefore, those students that will respond to the dealings in this way, then you work with. Those who don't, then it's a matter, you have to have some other system to correct them. You know what I'm saying? Either the parents correct them or they're not, you know, they're not the right student for the school, right? You know? Because every school has to have its particular student body that it is targeting. You know, in other words, you have a educational system and that works for a particular kind of student, so those students are what will work there. Right? Those students, those parents, like that, that kind of element. One of the points of dealing with children is always explanation, but in your explanations it has to be intelligent. And intelligent doesn't necessarily mean analytically intelligent as much as cleverness. Because for the kids, they catch cleverness as intelligence. So if they understand you're more clever than they are, then they respect you. Right? Does that make sense? And so when you give examples of things, don't use the same ones all the time. Keep changing them. You know, so it's always different, it's always that. Then they start to appreciate. Hygiene, you just explain about the importance of it. You know, why you do certain things and all that. But the thing is then it has to be, if you're dealing with non-devotee parents, it would have to be explained what is the hygiene that you're using, why, and everything like that. So that just depends upon your culture, you know, and I don't know how much you take these things like that. So let's say like in say a place like Finland, which is a Western country, but it's North European. And they're generally always moving in the top five countries in the world of education. It means their education is the highest in the world. Now for them it's a standard thing. It's known that using water after using the toilet is fairly standard, but not everybody does it, but it's well known that it's there. So when you go into their bathrooms, much of the time they have the facility for the water. Like that. But just in the next country's over, they don't. But it's just that they know it's better. You know, so it's like recommended, but if somebody doesn't, it's no big deal. You know, so you're just going to have to see what works here. But for the devotee children, they, you know, should understand stuff like that. So it's just a matter, if the environment's clean, then that makes for a more kind of balanced atmosphere. The mind works better. The mind, having been created from the mode of goodness, therefore, the cleaner the environment, the more peaceful the mind is. So the more peaceful the mind, the better the educational system. So the cleaner the environment there. But then it should be reflected in everything. The school should be clean. The school should be tidy. So you can teach these things from back of feeling how to be clean, how to be tidy. Like that. Does that make sense? Disease goes by touch. So you touch something, then you wash your hands. You know, then you don't get sick. These kind of things. That. So this makes the explanation. Teachers are not practicing devotees, then basically is they have their specific academics that they're teaching, and that's all they do. That's their only contact with the children. It means who deals with the children in their free time, that's the ones the children will relate to more. So if you have devotees dealing with them during the free time, they'll relate more with the devotees. If you have the non-devotees dealing with them, then they'll relate with them. Because playing is what's important to them, and whoever is around at that time becomes part of that world. Even though you're not being around doesn't mean you're taking part in their playing. You're just there watching that they don't, you know, aren't too insane. So you know what I'm saying? you know, how you say, pleasantly insane, not, you know, harmfully insane. Like that. Everything, self-esteem. Self-esteem is based on if you feel you can do something. That's based on understanding what is can be done. Right. So if you're doing something, let's say to do an activity, you have to have knowledge. Knowledge is then from observing the field that the activity will be performed in and with. Right. Means in other words, you have a situation and the elements within that situation of what you'll use. If you have knowledge about that, then you can apply. Right? So the point is that it's based on what you do in the moment. It has nothing to do with what you've done in the past. Even if you've done something stupid in the past, great, that's the past. But what you do right now is what is going to get the results now. Does that make sense? So it's about just being dynamic. That actually is what creates the self-esteem. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the Vedic would bring it in more from the intellectual side rather than the emotional. Right? Because in other words, I worked out something to do, it didn't work, so therefore I must be stupid. No, it's just a matter of you have to keep at it until it works. Like that. Anybody who is successful in the world, there's been so many tries that they, you know, they're generally not brought out. You know, history just talks about they did this. And they had an idea and then they tried it and it was successful. They don't explain about the hundreds of times in between that didn't work out. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right. So, therefore, a school has standards. The standards must be met. Because these are just the facts of how it works. But then everything has to be explained. Like you said, if somebody doesn't do it, it just means they don't understand it, or even though they understand what you said, it doesn't have any meaning to them. So either it has to be explained, you know, until it gets to the point where they understand and understand its use. And then at that point, then you can maintain. So those who can't be... don't respond to that, as I mentioned before, then it may not be the school, it may not be the right school environment for them. Does that make sense? You know, that's why still there's military schools and other things like that, because they have another form of discipline just by everything you do is disciplined. You know, you want to go to class, you have to march in a line, you know, and things like that. And the line isn't straight. You know what I'm saying? They go around corners, they go all kinds of things like that, because that's what you've been told to do. Right? So they learn that you do what you're told to do, like that. Does that make sense? So, for those who don't respond to the general educational process, then these other kinds of schools, they will get these things through, you know, just because, and everybody's doing it, so you just fit in. You know, while that needs other kind of education, everybody's more of an individual. So therefore, there's different levels of appreciation and understanding like that. Well, those other schools, everybody's doing exactly the same thing, so you don't mind doing it because you just don't want to be the one that's strange, you know, like that. Okay, your means in the educational process, you have... There's the teacher and student, it's a parental relationship. The advantage of it over the home parental relationship is that the home parental relationship, because of the emotional, content based on the biological connection, creates a familiarity due to the intimacy of the nature of the relationship that the children don't always take what the parents say as important at the time. It's not that they don't learn, but it's when they feel like it, they take it seriously, and when not, then they want to play, or they want to eat, or they want to do something else. While in the school, because you don't have that, then when there's a time for something, that's what's done. That's the advantage. So they're both parental rasas, but it's just a matter of which one is for what. You know, in other words, for training for life, that's going to be the teachers. For practicing life, that's going to be the parents. Like that. You know, so there must be a cooperation between them. You know, it's not that in this, then one is... In other words, the parents shouldn't take it that their position is superior. Yes, it's superior in the practice, you know, at home, but not in the learning of it. Because if they could teach it, why aren't they doing it? You know, if they're so great at it, why aren't they doing it? No, because they have jobs, because they can't, so many other things. So that's why there's teachers. So it's just that there has to be a natural respect. The parents deal with the kids at home, the teachers deal with the kids at school. There has to be a cooperation. If there's no cooperation, then you won't be successful with that student. Because the student, you know, you're dealing with the student is based on their parents' support. So if you don't have the parents' support, you don't get involved like that. You know, so the student's there to learn, you know, what the teachers have to offer. You know, the teacher's there to teach the information that's there, but they have to understand how that falls into the whole thing. Otherwise, each teacher thinks their subject is the most important. So they have to understand it's part of the overall curriculum. So everyone's doing their part. Otherwise, each one likes to give maximum homework, so there's no time for anybody else to do homework. So it has to be a balanced thing so that the kids will actually do the work. You know, there shouldn't be a competition between the different educational departments over, you know, who gets the attention like that. Does that make sense? Or if they require more, then they should stagger it so you don't have all the exams at once. You have the English at one time, you have the math at one time, you have the history at one time. So that extra time in studying, the kids can put it into those areas. Or it has to be balanced, then you can do it all at once. And then the principal is there to see that it all goes on nicely. You know, the quality of education, the quality of, you know, just the standards of the facilities itself, and everything like that. So you can't have the principal oversees curriculum and the administration, or you can break it up like that. But in modern, they'll see more of the administration, but in the Vedic, they'd see more of the curriculum. You can always get a manager. Someone can manage the school and not know anything about education. But you can't deal with curriculum unless you have some understanding. Deity worship, then it would be more of a, what are the basic elements in this and that? So it can be, you work it in when it's used. And it can be that it's something, it can be an elective even. So you can have a class that's, it can be a variety of things. Or if, you know, the devotees, then it would be part of their curriculum. But then for the others, they'd have other things to do and be doing. But not that the devotee kids wouldn't learn those also. So might have a few elective times, and then certain things are required, or it can be that you have elective times, so there's certain things that the non-devotee children have to learn also. You know, certain behavioral things, or, you know, other things like that, or something. You know, so just so that everybody's busy. Like that. So some other questions? Or?
Second page, I think. One wasn't
good. Motivate kids to chant prayers. You like to chant prayers, they'll like to chant prayers. In other words, don't put something on the curriculum that would be, oh, wouldn't it be nice if kids learned this? You only teach things that you want to do. You don't want to do it, they won't want to do it. You know, in other words, it's not about the kids being cute and nice and wonderful and all that kind of stuff. That you can do on little short things. Do a little play, all the parents come, everybody watches, great. And then they don't do it anymore. Because that's arts. But prayers, in this case, then is lifestyle. So lifestyle means what lifestyle you live is what lifestyle you can teach. You like chanting prayers? Don't like chanting prayers. You just think it's a great idea, then they may or may not think it's a great idea. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the way it is with anything.
So should we, like, I come in the bus in the morning with the kids, and we chant prayers in the bus.
As long as everybody likes it, then great.
But the teenagers, they say they don't like to.
Then don't worry about them. Teenagers have things to do on the bus. They have SMS, they have all kinds of really important stuff. So they're busy. As long as they don't kill each other, then you just sit. They'll sit in the back of the bus anyway. right? That's the right place to sit if you're a teenager. And then you get all the kids in the front of the bus and chant the prayers. Point is the teenagers will hear it, they'll be purified anyway. So don't worry about it. Teenagers, it's either you're catching their attention or you're not. You know, like that.
What we have currently is most of the classrooms have a little altar with deities, even in classes where the teachers are non-devotees.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how much actual deity worship and...
That is just a matter of being respectful or understanding it's there. If you have a prayer that you chant before you start the class or anything like that. Yeah, whatever it is, it's something basic that's always the same. Because non-devotees will understand it's got, the school has a certain thing. So let's say if they're a teacher, they could get a job at, let's say, a Catholic school. And so they might have some prayer or some ritual they do. They stand up or they close their eyes or something. So it doesn't matter to them because they're there to teach. So if that little bit is there, then as long as they don't have to teach it, then it's fine. But they don't mind. It's something that everybody's comfortable with. If the parents are comfortable with, these teachers are comfortable with it, then fine.
Maharaj, when you were talking about cleanliness and hygiene, and because it makes the mind more peaceful, I was thinking about myself with the university teachers that I had. They would, they had the qualification, but you saw that their private lives were very gross. Does that have an effect on the student?
Everything has an effect on the student.
So then, how should devotees approach, entering into university? If they feel the need...
The point is you want that, that's what you have to do. Just like, let's say you go into the market, then it's whatever's the environment and what's going on in the market is what you have to deal with. You know what I'm saying? If you don't like elevators music, don't go to Tesco's. You know what I'm saying?
Can you gain the knowledge without taking,
It just depends on your determination. The point is they're functioning on it, but they have a particular social status and all that. One is a teacher that should be there, but two is also they're expert in their areas, but not necessarily in a lifestyle that matches it. Because the modern academy, it's not about conclusion. In fact, it means the modern academy, if there's one thing you could say is, besides education and knowledge, is conclusiophobia is your common point of all modern academia. They don't want any conclusion, because if there's conclusion, that means you have to follow it. And so that's why they only want to play with knowledge. They don't want to be mandatory that you follow it. Just like there can be some really interesting things, let's say, by studying the ancient Greeks or Egyptians. And so it's fun to play with it, the difference and why they would approach it and what effects that would have in people's lives. They only want to talk about it. They don't want to go, this is right, so I should be doing it. Like that. So therefore, you're going to these situations to gain a particular element of knowledge. You go and take that and go away. But it's going to come in the package that it comes in. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maharaj, would the Vedic system of education teach an individual differently according to their natural dharma?
That's what I mentioned before, how you explain to them things.
Is the four different?
Yeah.
We have a challenge where perhaps a child might be suffering in some way at the school. Sometimes, just say for example, I'll give you an example. Recently, a little boy who is described as has a victim kind of mentality. So the other kids would pick on him, and no matter what they did, and having what's it called, that compassion circle. no matter how much they dealt with it with all the other children, somehow it just continued. And eventually the parents just took the child out of school. From our point of view, we're thinking, oh, he's going to lose his Krishna consciousness. Like, this is the worst thing. You know how you said that if a child can't fit, then they shouldn't be in the school, actually.
But the point is something like that. Children harassing other children is not standard in a school.
Mm.
The point is, it's not so much about... It means if that works as a method, as the compassion circle, but the point is that if you harass people, then you'll be harassed. Right? Because there is the element of justice. So nature is just. So therefore, how you deal is how the response you get. So if you want to be harassed, you harass now. So you're a little bigger now. But there's always kids that are going to be bigger than you. So then it's always going to work out. So if you can't cooperate together, then you could say that's another weakness you could say in the social system in the modern education, is you only grow up with the same age. So 1 year older is bigger, and 1 year younger is, you know, little dinky kids. You know, so the Vedic system, they always work together. Everything's done together. So they may do a specific class, you know, according to their level of educational understanding. But any other practical things in the school, they do them together. So they learn how to interact with all the varieties of ages. You know, that's also... And when they do activities, then teachers are involved just to see that it goes properly.
So when a child doesn't belong in the school, perhaps because of bad behaviour or whatever, what's our mood? Should we feel really
there's nothing you can do. Unless in feeling bad about it, if you're going to expand the scope of the school by having specialized programs or other things to accommodate it. But if not, that's what you can do. You can only do a certain amount, so you stick to that. You know? Like I said, if you can run a Krishna conscious military school, then, you know, hard call. And if you can't, then don't worry about it. So that's there. Also, you have the element of kids being, that you have a certain curriculum that they have to get through, but means the common thing is that you do it that on 1 year increments. But the thing is you're going to have kids that are smarter than that and kids that are less smart than that. So the problem is the smarter kids get bored and the less ones feel that they're not accomplishing anything. So in other words, let's say you have 3 years of education, then they take however long they need. 45 o'clock. Comes. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. So therefore, everybody accomplishes the thing. It's just somebody might take 4 years to do it. Let's say it's a 3-year program. Somebody might take 4 years. Somebody might take 2 years. So however they can function, that's what you do. Does that make sense? That's an interesting thing, they do that in Finland. That's the way their schools work. So that's why one of the reasons they have the highest education in the world, because everybody gets through it. Well, in other countries where they stick to the 1 year, and if you don't, you fail, you're kept back, then they lose their self-esteem. And the kids that are smarter, then they either drop, they're frustrated, and then they generally move to private education or something, because there they'll actually attend to their brains. Does that make sense? You know, so these are things to consider, but it also has to work with however it works here. In Finland, that's just standard. Everybody does that, so no one thinks it's strange.